Raising the Bets is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give. You're listening to Raising the Bet. We're a Catholic couple raising five kids outside of Boston. Join us as we share the joys and challenges of marriage, homeschool, and our adventures near and far as we make sense of the world and experience the best parts of our culture. I'm Don Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
Did you forget that for a sec?
Yes.
So, obviously, you might hear from my voice. I'm dealing with allergies.
Or a cold.
I think it's allergies.
I think it's a cold.
Tree pollen is high right now. It's the spring. I have allergies.
I have allergies and I'm not experiencing any of this. So,
yeah, I know. So just because you're not experiencing it means that it can't be allergies for me.
Right. It can't be.
Sure. So let's get into what's been going on. So we talked a few weeks ago. I was on a scout camping trip with the boys. And we mentioned that there had been a bullying incident involving Ben where he was bullied by some other kids. And we thought we'd dealt with it at the time. And then we found out the other day that the parents of this other boy wanted to have a meeting because from their point of view, the story that they heard was that our boys, both Ben and Anthony, bullied their son. So that caused no small amount of anxiety on my part, because I was there. I didn't see the events themselves, but I saw the aftermath. And, you know, from what I saw, I mean, and knowing our sons, no. Ben was the one in tears. The other boy was the one who was in high spirits. Like, if it had been him bullying the other boy, it would have been the other thing. In any case, I don't want to get into all the he said. So we had a meeting with the scout leaders tonight. And how do you think
and
it
the
went?
Other boy's parents.
And the other boy's parents. How did you feel going into this and how did you feel it went?
Lots of trepidation going in. I think by the meeting was very tense to start with.
Yeah.
Everybody was on the defensive. I think we worked it out pretty well. Ended with everybody understanding a little bit better where everyone was coming from and seeing the incident not so much as bullying as a lot of misunderstandings and some issues with the supervision from the adults.
Right. So what do you think was the key change in how the situation went?
I think the key change was sort of recognizing the points where the boys were misunderstanding each other, where they were coming from, and, you know, possible points of miscommunication, and sort of seeing the bigger picture from all the sides. I think once we sort of realized, you know, these people are reasonable and we're all, you know, aiming at the same thing, but sometimes kids who aren't well supervised will get into trouble and not be able to negotiate
the interpersonal problems, the things that adults can often just deal with that kids can't.
Right. Kids make errors of judgment and one thing leads to another. And without adults to supervise, to step in, things can get.
Right. Including misperception of extreme shyness as aloofness or disdain and that sort of thing.
Right.
And that leads to further problems. And there was some serious allegations, including physical stuff and that sort of thing. But I think we all kind of came to a conclusion that it wasn't as bad as some of the boys must have described it to the other leaders or to parents and that sort of thing.
Right. I think sometimes boys can be dramatize things a little bit. And but ultimately, with no adult witnesses, there was really sort of a he said, and everyone was probably being a little bit overly dramatic.
I mean, I have to admit, going to this meeting, I was very tense. I was anxious about it because I spent a lot of time. I put a lot of time into scouting for our whole family. And it seemed to me that if we couldn't come to a resolution on this, the boys at least wouldn't be going back to that troop. And maybe even, you know, we'd have to because the boys' troop and the girls' troop are so intertwined, it might even affect the girls' involvement in their troop. So I was concerned about that. I didn't want them to not be able to do scouting. But I also want them to be safe and to be, have a good time. So I feel like those fears and anxieties were allayed at the moment. The troop is going to take some action. They're going to do some of the merit badges that have to do with kids learning how to work with other kids who aren't like them, for instance. And they're going to be more supervision on these. The part of the problem was, is we, like I mentioned in that episode, was we were on a camping trip in cabins in a winter trip where the weather kept us indoors and there wasn't enough planned to keep the boys busy and out of trouble.
Yeah.
And that's on the leaders.
And we know what happens when kids don't have enough to do.
Enough to do. They find trouble. So I feel like...
I felt like the leaders were a little bit taken aback at finding that there was some...
That they had some criticism coming their way, too?
Yeah.
Yeah.
This wasn't just a disagreement with among boys. It was also a, we really need to step up and
right.
work better and try harder.
Right. So... I think the resolution so far is satisfactory. We'll see how it's implemented, the
right.
different conclusions. My gut is Ben is not going to want to do scouts for a little bit, which is fine. We'll work him back up to it, to going again. And then we'll see where we go from there. But I hope this is behind us and, everyone can be friends again, which they were before. You know how kids are. And with kids, it's, sometimes this stuff blows over and, and
a lot faster than the adults think it's going
right.
to.
Right. It'll be arm in arm within a month and the adults will be like, wait, I thought you guys were enemies. No, we're fine. And never mind a month. Sometimes Anthony can't remember. He was mad at somebody for like after an hour later.
Right.
Like, you were just really mad at him. I was. Like, dude, you were going to go to war with him. I was. No, I wasn't. Ah. 11-year-old boys, short-term memory. Anyway, so that fun bit of business.
It was drama.
Drama. I mean, as usual, it took up a whole lot of my time, my mind, my peace over the weekend, because we found out about this meeting on Friday, and the meeting was Sunday night, so I spent a lot of the weekend thinking about it and playing out scenarios in my head, which is not, I know it's not healthy and I shouldn't do it. I just can't help it. I mean, at Mass this morning, the whole time I'm tense about it. And it turns out that the homily was perfect for it. We'll get to that in due course. But the homily, which I think was Holy Spirit, because I don't think Father Matt was supposed to do the Mass today. We'll talk about that later.
Maybe.
Yeah. So the other one, another thing we happened this week, we got to go, we went on a date on Friday, sort of.
Yeah.
We went out just the two of us.
Yes. I did not. I needed to go back to the optometrist to get my glasses prescription filled because it turned out that.
You have a complex prescription now.
I now have a complex prescription that I can't get online.
Yeah.
From an online vendor. Yay, getting old. Love it. I don't know. I don't like picking out glasses. I find it fraught and frustrating and. While I would have preferred my sister go with me, unfortunately, she's in Texas, so poor Dom got drafted into watching me try on frames.
I was fine. I didn't feel like I was all that much help. How do these look? Fine. How do these look? Fine. Are these better than the other ones? I don't know. Do you like them better? Yeah, I wasn't all that much help.
I needed some emotional support, so yeah.
I'm happy to be there to be the emotional support. When you do the social anxiety, cuddle bear or whatever. So then from there, we decided to stop at this, there was a Portuguese market nearby.
Right.
A Brazilian market, I should say. They speak Portuguese in Brazil. But I wanted to pick up some meat to grill for the weekend. And I'd been thinking about this one particular Brazilian cut. And we'll talk about that in a few minutes too. So I said, oh, that looks like they might be a butcher. So let's stop over there. They weren't really a butcher, but more of a general market, but a Brazilian general market, which is a lot of fun.
I got some really good sweetbread. It had like it's sort of a cheesy filling. It was so
like
good.
A sweet cheesy filling. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then those.
Then my favorite little Portuguese.
The little round balls of dough.
Yeah, they're little like. cheese bread is what they call it. They're like little round golf ball sized balls of dough. The cheese is mixed in with the batter. It's not like
an arancini where it's like a ball with a thing in the middle. It's more mixed throughout it.
Yeah. Anyway, they're so good. They're so cheesy and gooey, and I love them.
They're really good.
My mom used to bring us like box mix that you could just like add water, I think, and oil, and water. And anyway, so good.
My friend Carla used to bring them. She's Brazilian, and she used to bring them to work and share them once in a while. They're really good, homemade. But it was kind of fun, and you know the girl to check out was like. Something in Brazilian Portuguese, and I'm like, I don't speak Portuguese. And she's like, is that all? Oh, yes, that's all. Thank you. Just kind of funny. I love going into shops of places like unfamiliar cuisines, or even cuisines that I'm somewhat familiar with, but just going in and seeing the different ingredients and the different stuff and stuff in different languages. I don't know what that is on the label. I mean, you could Google it and find out, but it's fun to just see the different things that you can. And think of the possibilities of stuff you can cook. So that was a lot of fun. So let's talk a little bit about stuff we've been cooking. In fact, on Saturday, we had my parents came over. I went and picked them up and brought them over to our house for the day. That was nice. And we did a lot of house, little things around the house, getting the house back to normal, hanging pictures and a lot of that stuff. So that was nice. We got all the pictures up in our room.
Not quite all, but most.
We got a lot of pictures up in our room.
And we got the kids to clean out the car, clean and vacuum the cars.
Yeah. Well, they cleaned the van and part of the car. I did the rest of the car. And then they left the lights on in the van and killed the battery. But that's fine.
Yeah, well, you know.
I jumped it this morning. We were going to go to Mass and the van was dead. So we had to, you know, switch plans. But yeah, that was. That was nice that we got them out there doing that. I owe them money. I'm getting a reputation as a Welsher.
Mm.
I promise them money and I don't pay them. I don't have small bills. I need to get some fives.
I'm pretty sure one of the kids has enough money in their wallet or piggy bank to break a 20.
Yeah. I mean, Lucy was like, I have over $100.
Yeah, Lucy's rolling in cash. I'm like,
you got more money in your bank than I got in my wallet.
She does.
Yeah. So we had my parents over, and there was a particular cut of meat I wanted to try. So there's this, I mentioned last time, I found this meat market in the next town over from us, Brockton Meat Market. And they're a Brazilian market. There's a lot of Brazilian Portuguese in the area. And they're a Brazilian butcher. And there's a particular cut of meat called picanha. It's a beef cut. You might otherwise be known as a sirloin cap. And it's got a big, thick layer of fat on the top of it. But it's got this nice, nice grain, not too marbly meat as part of it. And it's sort of triangular. And what I've been watching online is like what it's the kind of meat that you get at a Brazilian steak restaurant, steakhouse that's on the skewers. But you see it when you see it served there, it's kind of like folded over like a horseshoe shape with the fat on the outside that's on the skewer. And they slice it there at the table. But what I'd seen was one where it was cooked whole. So the way you do it is you score.
Whole instead of on a skewer.
Right, whole instead of on a skewer. Not sliced up. So what you do is you score the you kind of trim the fat cap. And I could have trimmed it even more than I did. But because it was a really thick fat cap.
There's a lot of fat on it.
Yeah. And you then you score it in a diamond pattern. And then you put salt and pepper on it. I had a rub that's a coarse salt, coarse pepper, and garlic. And I put that all over it. And you put it all over the top. You kind of get it into the scorings. And then you put it on the bottom. And then on the grill, so now that I have the smoker, I put get a fire going in the firebox. And then I get it up to 275 and put it on the smoker part. So you get the indirect cook. And for an hour. And once it hits 123, you pull it off, you let it rest, and it slices great. And it was so tender.
So very tender.
It was so good. Everyone was raving about it, and it was so juicy and tender and
Your dad had multiple helpings.
Yeah, my dad. Three helpings. My dad's like 89, so he doesn't eat much.
He usually eats like a bird.
Right. This was like I'll take a little more. I'll take another little piece. I'll take another little bit.
Yeah, he really liked it a lot.
Yeah. So it was a great cut, and I would totally do this again. I might trim the fat a little more than I did. But I also was able to do the eggplant, like our usual eggplant, where I slice it in half, score it, put it like a quarter cup of oil right onto the eggplant flesh itself, grill it over the direct heat for 5 minutes, and then flip it over in the indirect heat for another half hour after I put another quarter cup of oil with garlic in it. And then when it's done, I scrape the insides out, mix it with a little of a mint syrup that we have, some garlic pepper sauce. That's the chili garlic. Thank you. Chili garlic sauce and cilantro. And I think it was the best that we've ever had it.
Yeah, it was really good. Maybe it's just because we haven't had it in a while.
It could be.
But
it was also firmer than it usually is.
Yeah.
And I think it was actually a little better firmer.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then some asparagus that I threw on the grill too. Just so much fun having a bigger grill with different options. You can really make a whole meal on it, you know? I mean, I love my Weber, but it was only so big and there was only so much room for cooking different things. This gave you a lot more room. So it was really awesome. So the other thing I want to mention in the food section here is something I discovered called a company called Amish Country Popcorn from Bern, Indiana. And they sell all kinds of varieties of popcorn. And you wouldn't realize it, except there really are lots of different kinds of popcorn. And I ordered a couple different ones from them. There was one that's called Ladyfinger, which is really small, and it's supposed to be hullless. You know, those little hard bits that get stuck in your teeth. It's supposed to have less of that. And then there was another one that was like a medium, basically like a basic medium popcorn size, medium white popcorn. But they have all kinds of baby white. They have big mushroom ones and rainbow colors and all these other things. They also sell like ballpark style popcorn salt. And they have even like the movie theater butter type topping. It ain't butter, folks. And it's been awesome. So the little ones, the Ladyfinger, turns out not so good in an air popper because they're so small and light, they just fly out of the air popper. I was actually having to hold something in front of the air popper exit to catch them so that I had and then pour them back in every little bit. Not so good for that. Maybe in a Whirly Pop or in a pan or something like that, that would be better.
I don't know. I didn't like the texture as much either.
Well, it's smaller. It pops smaller.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I'd get it again. I kind of feel bad that I bought 2 pounds of it. But the medium white popcorn that we've been using has been really good. And I want to try some of the other varieties as well. Yeah, it's been good. And, you know, they sell 25-pound bags.
Of kernels?
Of popcorn kernels. That's a lot of popcorn.
A lot of popcorn.
I mean, I guess it's if you like have a movie theater or something. It's got to be something like that. If you have like one of those carts with the hot popper thingy, it's got to be. Anyway, yeah, it's good. And I really like the ballpark style popcorn salt on it. That's been really, it's got a really good flavor to it. I really like that. So, AmishCountryPopcorn.com. They're located in Bern, Indiana.
How'd you find them?
It was mentioned on Mac Break Weekly. It's a Mac podcast.
Uh-huh.
They go off on their tangents, as you can tell. And one of the guys was talking about he has a particular popcorn passion, and he has a particular way of doing it, and he uses like truffle salt, and you know, only buys his popcorn from these guys, and it's all this other stuff. So it was kind of funny. So yeah, it was good. So that's what we've been eating. So let's talk about stuff we've been watching. I watched for an episode of Secrets of Movies and TV Shows, I watched Apollo 13 again, which was awesome.
Never seen it.
You've never seen it? Oh, it's so awesome. The funny thing is, so the events of Apollo 13, which was the Apollo mission that had the accident on the way to the moon, and then they had to come back without landing, and they had to figure out how to make it back on less power than they should have had, and damage and all this other stuff.
Right.
So that happened in 1970. The movie came out in 1995, so 25 years later.
Uh-huh.
It's been 27 years since the movie. So it's been longer since the movie than the movie was from the events. And when I told the panel that, they were all like, oh, no, why did you have to tell us that? I feel so old now. It was funny. And one of the panelists, Shelley, she actually used to work at a university in the Houston area that holds the archives for the Johnson Space Center during the Apollo era. So she knew a lot of the people involved, knew a lot of the inside information. So it was really cool talking to her about it. But Apollo 13 is such a great movie. Houston, we have a problem. You know, that great line. And then there's another line that the flight director, Gene Kranz, is famous for saying in the movie is a failure is not an option. But it turns out he never actually said that in real life. It was a description of someone describing the events to the screenwriters, saying that they laid out all the options for what they were going to do, and failure wasn't one of them, you know, or something like that.
Right.
And they thought that was such a great line, they wanted to put it in the movie. So we watched that. Then we both separately watched Moon Knight.
Right.
Now, what did you think of Moon Knight?
It was an intriguing first episode. So it's a new series, Marvel Universe series, starring Oscar Isaac, Poe Dameron, who is...
That's what you know him as.
Yeah, I know him as Poe Dameron. And I'm not sure I would have recognized him as Poe Dameron because he looks and sounds very different. In this
He's a good actor because he can really take on different...
Yeah. I'm not 100% sold on this story, but I really like the character. And yeah, Oscar Isaac's character is really great. And I'm intrigued by the mystery that's remaining. There were parts of it that I found really exciting, like the mystery stuff. I really liked the weird Egyptian
creatures and mythology and magic
stuff. Kind of bugged me, frankly, a little bit.
It's a little bit of The Mummy starring what's his name? The Mummy, the movie, The Mummy.
Brandon something or other?
Yeah. What's his name?
Brendan. Something.
Oh, you're going to make me look it up. That's okay. I'm going to have to look it up. I could never remember his name.
I am definitely looking forward to more episodes of it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm intrigued.
It's Brendan Fraser. So.
Right. Is it going to tie in with other Marvel stuff, or is it kind of as just a standalone?
Moon Knight is a Marvel superhero character.
Right, I know that.
It's sort of Marvel's Batman, in a sense. I don't know anything about Moon Knight, frankly. So I'm not sure how it will tie in, but it evidently is part of the larger universe and will interact with other characters. In fact, it would be really cool if he interacts with, say, Falcon or somebody at some point. So this character name is Steven. He works in the gift shop at the British Museum in the Egyptian wing. And he's very...
He would like to be like a tour guide or something, but except he's stuck working in the gift shop.
He comes across as very on the spectrum, shall we say?
Maybe.
He's quirky.
He's awkward.
He's awkward and quirky and socially inept and all that other stuff. And the very first thing you see in the episode is he wakes up, his ankle chained to the bed.
Right.
And there's sand all on the floor around the bed. So clearly to see if he gets out of bed and walks on it.
And also tape along the door.
He tapes the door frame, you know, so he checks to see if the tape has been torn and all that stuff. So obviously he's afraid of something, himself doing something while he's asleep. Well, it turns out he is doing things. Like there's a point in it where he blacks out and then wakes up somewhere else far away in the middle of something. And then there's a voice talking to him. And you get the sense that he's living two lives, essentially. I don't want to give too much of it away. But like you said, Oscar Isaac is really great in this. I really enjoy. He's been great in a bunch of things I've seen him in. So I really enjoy seeing him act. But he's really good in this, and he's really interesting, and I'm really curious to see where this goes. This is definite on my list of stuff to keep watching. So we've also watched today, we continue our MCU watch with the kids. We watched finally Avengers Infinity War.
Oh my goodness, that movie crushes me.
Crush the kids.
It was.
Yes.
It was very quiet for a long time after the movie was over. Just everyone was a little bit stunned, including me. Oh my gosh. Yeah. That is like the worst cliffhanger in the history of cliffhangers.
As I said to the kids, we had to wait a year. You only have to wait
a couple weeks. I didn't have to wait a year.
Yeah, I know. You didn't have to wait. I had to wait a year to find out what happened. I remember people's reactions walking out of the theater going, how can they leave us hanging for a year on that? On that ending? I mean, it is the downer of downerest endings.
Oh.
I mean, everyone you love is dead.
As a cinematic storytelling move, it is bold.
It is bold. Can you imagine the meeting that they had where they said, okay, hear me out. Oh, pitch meeting. That would be a great pitch meeting.
Although, I mean, it was always planned. Like, the whole story arc was planned as one big MCU story arc.
The ending was known.
Right. And there's just no way to tell the story in one movie. Like, that would...
I think that was originally the plan, though. They were going to try to do it in one, but there was no way to get all these different heroes into one movie and tell the entire story.
Right. I mean, as it is, both Endgame and Infinity War and Endgame,
yeah,
are both really long movies.
Yes.
And
Infinity and an Endgame is going to have a smaller cast, shall we say.
But, I mean, and it really... To do the story justice, and I do think they do the story justice.
Yeah,
it needs the time. It needs the time for the emotion to hit all of the emotional hit points.
Right.
And I think they do. I think they do a really, really good job of selling the moment, of selling the...
I don't think anybody gets short shrift in it.
No. I mean, I really felt like all of the characters... It is a huge cast, and I feel like everybody gets their...
It gets their emotional beat.
Their beats. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it goes from sad, really sad, tragic, to funny. I mean, there are some really, really laugh out loud, hilarious moments. I mean, when the Guardians of the Galaxy come in, you just can't help but laugh.
Right, right.
I mean, the Guardians of the Galaxy meet Thor could have been a whole movie on its own.
He's like a pirate angel.
But I love that they didn't try to... They didn't try to make that its own movie, that they let that be the comic beats in what could otherwise have been an unrelentingly depressing movie.
And each of the sections, the Guardians and the Avengers, they felt like their own thing. So like when the Guardians first show up, we hear them, they come in singing 70s music or 80s music.
Yes.
You know?
Oh, it was
Rubber
perfect.
Man, you know, it just felt like the Guardians of the Galaxy. So each section felt right.
Right. I mean, it felt like the tone was good. The characters were great. It is a good movie. It's a well-crafted movie, and I really appreciate that. But, oh my goodness, it's going to be hard to wait for watching Endgame.
Right, because next week we get to watch Ant-Man and Wasp, because the events in Ant-Man and Wasp tie into Endgame. Right. It would be if we watched Endgame first and go back, then it's like, oh, it's out of order. I mean, you could do it, but then you've kind of ruined, you know, what's going to happen at the end of Ant-Man and the Wasp then. So this was the one I insist we actually put in the middle.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So next week is Palm Sunday. Then the week after that is Easter. So do we watch Endgame on Holy Saturday?
Though, honestly, it's kind of an Easter-y movie, isn't it?
It's the resurrection.
I mean, it is a movie about resurrection.
Yeah, from despair of Good Friday.
It's, I mean, really, Infinity War is a very...
That's a Holy Thursday, Good Friday movie.
Holy Thursday, Good Friday. It is a Lenten movie. It is just, it's about death.
Right. Well, it's about the destruction and despair all is seemingly lost.
Right. It is that about that lost battle. And you think like all of these heroes, all of the best heroes that we know all coming together, how could they lose? Like, it really seems impossible that in a franchise where every movie has ended on at least a a positive note.
Yep.
To see them lose so painfully badly, it's just it really hits you.
Isn't there a moment at the end where like Rhodey comes in and he's like, what happened, guys? You know, he's kind of like that. And I was waiting for someone to say, we lost. I think we just lost. Like, they lost.
Yeah.
Half of everybody wiped out, et cetera, et cetera, you know?
The Avengers lost. The Guardians of the Galaxy lost. The Wakandans lost. Like,
everybody's lost.
It's epic.
Right.
The Asgardians, like, that the beginning scene, that itself is just crushing.
Right.
It is a movie that starts off with death and destruction of a beloved character, and it goes down from there.
Right. Several beloved characters.
Right.
Yeah.
More and more and more. And yet, I love it. I mean, it's such good storytelling.
And there's hope. There's hope in it, though. That's the thing.
There is hope. They do not leave you without hope. There are several moments.
Right. And there's a key character moment where he says, there's one chance in 14 million.
Yeah. I mean, and really, isn't that really ultimately the Christian story? Like, there is one chance. There is one hope.
Yep.
There is one shot at redemption.
There's only one way.
There's one way. I mean, I kind of really love that moment where it comes down to, I can see one possible hopeful resolution. Yeah,
there's one, one way that
but
we
the
win.
One way involves defeat.
Yes.
Mean, this is the eucatastrophe of the Christian, of our faith.
True.
The only way possibly to win is to lose
first.
Is to die.
Like Jesus dies on the cross.
You can't get to Easter Sunday without going through Good Friday, without going into the tomb. And I feel like we have been taken down into the tomb. And I like the fact that they were willing to do that. It is a movie which has so many good Christian echoes.
True. This is true. Yeah. So, yeah, maybe a Holy Saturday would be the right time to watch it then.
If we have time.
If we have time.
Holy Saturday tends to be a kind of a busy day. Yeah. We usually dye our eggs on that day.
Yeah. And I might have to be doing some recordings and stuff. But there's also the week after, which is Bella's confirmation Saturday.
Well,
but Sunday would be fine.
But, you know, Easter week, like during the week, we usually take off of school at least a few days.
I don't take off from work.
Well,
and, you know, watching the movie takes place in my office. So
we could have it like a school night.
We could find
like a weeknight.
Find 3 hours where we could.
Yeah.
Pull it.
It happen.
We'll see it. We'll see how it goes. So from there, let's talk about, speaking of the resurrection, let's talk about our mass readings this week.
Oh, I thought we were going to talk about what we were reading.
Well, so you mentioned you finished The Power and the Glory, but you talked about that last week.
Oh, yeah. It was so good. The ending. Oh, it was really good.
Yeah.
Speaking of like ending and defeat. I mean, yeah.
Right. Well, you don't want to give away any.
I don't want to give away anymore, but it was powerful and it was a really good Linton read. And I'm kind of looking forward to reading it again some point. It's one of those books that I feel like kind of needs to be dwelt on.
Okay. And you started a new book by him?
I realized I had another Graham Greene novel sitting on my shelf, so I picked it up. It's called The Human Factor, and it's actually a Cold War era
spy novel.
Spy novel, except it's a spy novel that deliberately repudiates the whole James Bond thing. It's not violent. It's not sexy like James Bond. In fact, there's a great moment where there's a bunch of guys drinking in a bar, and they're kind of mocking Ian Fleming.
Oh, funny.
And his whole James Bond thing. Like the guys who actually work in MI6, who've, you know, this is post, you know, immediately post World War II. And so there's a lot of guys who are veterans, and they know what this is really, what spycraft is really like. And it's not James Bond.
Right.
And Which doesn't mean that nobody ever dies, but it's not
the glamour.
Glamorous.
Yeah.
And I like that. It's an ordinary, the main character is an ordinary guy. He's got a wife and a kid and he lives in the suburbs. And he's kind of an everyman, and I like that. I liked that it's not.
But it takes a turn. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Of course it does.
Of course. Otherwise, it wouldn't be an interesting story. So, cool.
Yeah.
I'm still working my way through my novel, Sierra 6, so there's nothing to report there. It's good. Still good. It's always good. The Green Man. All right. So now let's move on to.
Okay.
Oh, you're doing the poetry thing. Do you want to talk a little bit about your poetry prompt thing for Poetry Month?
Oh, yeah. So evidently this April is National Poetry Month. And there's a lot of different poetry events. But one blogger don't really follow, actually. I just stumbled upon it, is doing a write a poem a day with like prompts. And I decided to try to play along. So I'm trying my hand at writing a poem a day. Some of the prompts are easier than others. But we'll see. But it's kind of fun to have other people to write with and to talk about with. It's certainly less ambitious than, you know, National Novel Writing Month, which right. is not my speed.
Right.
So we'll see. Cool. I might try to post some of them on my blog, but I kind of have to get out of my not posting on the blog slump.
Okay.
We'll see.
All right. Now we're going to talk about the rest.
Okay.
So I alluded to the fact that we almost didn't have, I felt like Father Matt wasn't scheduled for this mass.
Yeah, he was just running really late.
Yeah, because it was like 5 or 6 minutes after the start time. And the
organist stood up and said, hold on just a minute. Please be patient.
There is a priest coming.
The priest will be father will be here in a few minutes.
Yeah. So I don't know if like another priest dropped the ball or Father Matt forgot or was running late or whatever.
Yeah.
So came in without an opening hymn, which was interesting. So the readings this week were about the woman caught in adultery. That's the gospel. And Father Matt started with talking about G.K. Chesterton.
Yes, he
which
did.
Is always a good sign.
Gotta love Chesterton.
If you have a homily start with a Chesterton, you know, it's going to be good.
He talked about Chesterton as a convert, and he said when asked why he converted, he says it was because he wanted to have his sins
because
forgiven.
That's where your sins can be forgiven.
Right. And he said, you know, this was the focus of the homily was forgiveness of sins, go to confession, really.
Right.
About going to confession being not just to have your sins removed, but also to strengthen you for the next encounter. But he made this great point about St. John Vianney saying that when we go to confession, it's not just like that God just says, okay, well, we're not going to, you know, we're not going to talk about that anymore. It's that our sins literally cease to exist. God removes them as if he's editing a film. Like they are gone. Like they're not even in his mind anymore. And if it's not in the mind right. of God, it doesn't exist.
He said God has knowledge. He doesn't have memory because God exists outside of time, which I thought was interesting.
So like once our sins are wiped away, that's it.
God has forgotten them. He doesn't hold them against us.
We might remember them, but he doesn't. And that's just so beautiful. I mean, like, we hold on to them more than God does. We feel the weight of them even after we've confessed them. But that's our own human limitation. It's not really how God interacts with us.
Right.
So, yeah, we can have confidence that God is with us. And so when we go back and we think, okay, I'm confessing the same sin over and over again. Father Matt made this really great point, and he's like, it's not the same sin.
Because we're not the same people.
We're not the same person. Like, we feel like we're stuck in a rut and we're doing the same thing over and over again, but that's not how God actually sees us. We might feel like we're stuck, but we're actually making progress, even when we don't feel like we're making progress. Just going to confession is progress. Like that is a positive motion forward. And we're kind of moving in baby steps. But like I tell the kids, like sometimes it takes a long time for you to learn something. Like learning how to overcome our tendencies is a process. We have to be patient with ourselves because God is so infinitely patient with us. And so we have to kind of have that same sort of like you know, when your kid's learning how to speak and you repeat the same word over and over again so that they can get it, like, that's kind of how God is with us. Like, he wants us to succeed.
And stop beating yourself up because you haven't succeeded yet.
Right.
Right.
You know, some things take a long time. Some kids take years to master the R sound.
Yeah.
And if we can be patient with our kid saying wabbit, we can be patient with ourselves for the things that we are still learning how to.
For being wascally.
Right.
Yeah, and I also loved how he picked apart the people bringing the woman caught in adultery. He's like, pointed out a few things, interesting things, like, teacher, this woman was caught in the very act of committing adultery. And you wonder, how do you catch someone in the very act of committing adultery?
In the very act. So he says, was it entrapment? Was it a setup?
Were they following her just to catch her?
Yeah, were they waiting? Like yeah. Watching her go to whatever encounter it was?
You know what I always wondered? Where's the dude?
That too.
Yeah, because I was waiting for him to bring that one up. But, adultery takes two people.
Right.
So why is she the only one?
And Father Matt says, this scapegoat mentality, the finding somebody else to blame, the it's not me.
Right.
Is such a human universal failing. It's what's behind, you know, racism and misogyny, this tendency to try to push all of our bad onto
the bad in our country is because people. Of them. These people who are believe differently, look differently, act differently, that they're why things are bad. There's never
right.
That the other quote from Chesterton was, when someone asked him what's wrong with the Catholic Church, he says, I am.
Although I think actually he said, what's wrong with the world?
Yeah, it's probably.
Yeah. What's wrong with the world?
I am. In other words, the first place I need to look is inside me. And that was the thing that really, that part of the homily was the thing that was helping me with what we did tonight with the meeting, is I was feeling very self-righteous and unjustly maligned, you know, by proxy of my kids. And I'm like, you know, maybe we aren't blameless. Maybe our kids weren't blameless in what happened. And so I need to acknowledge that. And then, but also say, but your kid might not have been blameless either. And the adults weren't blameless either. And that sort of thing. So I needed to hear that this morning before that meeting.
That's what, like, he talked about how this kind of scapegoating builds up really gradually, and it often starts with gossip.
Right.
And just how when we start talking about someone and we single them out, that negativity can build.
And negativity in a group builds and builds.
Builds. It cycles. The mean-spiritedness and spirals. But I love this fact that he says it spirals until someone breaks it and says something positive.
Like there's the studies have shown this.
Right. Yeah. That it's not inevitable. When you are willing to step forward and say something positive, when you're ready to break away from the crowd and stand against them and speak up for the person who's being gossiped or maligned or scapegoated.
Yeah.
That it just takes, you know, Jesus. And that Jesus doesn't even argue with them. I also loved this point. He says Jesus doesn't answer them directly.
Right.
He almost never answers a
challenge directly.
Challenge. He always has this very oblique way of bringing it back around to the other person, but coming at it from an angle, from a place where you don't expect.
Right. He doesn't say, don't do what Moses said or do what Moses said.
So what Jesus does here is he bends down and writes on the ground. Like, he doesn't even answer them at first. He pauses, stops, and ignores them and writes on the ground, it's one of the most intriguing bits in the gospel, because as Father pointed out, this is the only time we actually see Jesus writing. We see him reading in the synagogue.
Yeah.
But this is the only time we actually see him write. And we don't know what he writes.
Right.
The gospel doesn't tell us anything about what he is writing on the ground, which is such a mystery.
Right. And so he said that the church fathers speculated that what he was writing were the lists of the sins of the people ready to throw the stones.
So that when he says, let those of you who are without sin cast the first stone, they're confronting them.
And they're looking down seeing, oh, yeah, are he's listing sins. My sins.
Right. Which, of course, Jesus would know not just in general what sins are, but
but in specificity and number.
Which you wonder, how specific, if it is a list of their sins, how specific did Jesus get? Because Father kind of rattled off a list of sort of generic.
The seven deadly sins, basically.
Right. But was Jesus just writing down the generics, or was he writing down?
Yeah, Ahmed did this last week with so-and-so.
Right. Like, was he getting into the, you know, number and kind and
yeah.
the specifics, which would be interesting. I mean,
that would make me drop my stone and walk away. That stone, as Father says, that stone would get heavy in your hand very quick.
Right. And of course, he pointed out that the crowd disperses, beginning with the elders, which I thought Father had an interesting take, because I'd kind of thought about that as like the leaders are the first to
abandon the field.
But he starts out that being, you know, age comes wisdom and insight and self-knowledge. And so the oldest are perhaps those with enough life experience to be able to
recognize that those are their sins being listed.
Right. To have some degree of self-knowledge. Now, obviously, if they're like entrapping this woman and scapegoating her and trying to entrap Jesus, they're not guiltless in this matter, but perhaps they're more open to self-reflection.
Right. And then we have the woman where like Jesus is, like, looks up and says, hey, where'd they all go? And has no one condemned you? And she says, no one. And Father was like, in that moment, she's probably waiting for Jesus to condemn her.
Right.
Because he's the one who is without sin.
I mean, right. He could have picked up a stone and thrown it at her.
I love the old joke about like that he is without sin, cast the first stone, and then a stone comes flying out of the crowd and whacks the girl and Jesus says, Mom!
Ah, right. As if Mary would. But
as if Mary yes. would. I know. But in any case, Jesus doesn't condemn her either.
Right. The crowd comes to its senses, and Jesus wants that for all of us. He wants us to come to our senses. And then he wants to tell us to go and sin no more, like he does to the woman. I also liked the Father mentioned, you know, that one of the things that the crowd realizes is tomorrow it could be me.
Just as easily, just as easily the crowd could, in front of a crowd with stones in their hands.
Right. The crowd could just as easily turn on me. And, you know, along with that, what's wrong with the world? Like I'm an ass. You're an ass. Like, not I'm okay, you're okay, but like, I'm not okay.
I'm not okay and you're not okay. We're all a mess.
We're all in this mess trying to get through and needing to give each other grace because we need.
Well, this is really speaks grace. Against the whole cancel culture thing, doesn't it? You know, the mob rises up for the right. against the infraction.
And then he had a line which made me think totally of Lord of the Rings, although he didn't go there. He says, we are all the woman and the crowd, and we're a little bit concerned about getting what we deserve. Because what we deserve is not
good.
Good. Like he says, advertisers like to tell us, you know, you deserve
this new car.
This new car. You deserve a break. You deserve a Snickers bar. But he says, if we actually get what we deserve,
we wouldn't be happy about it.
We would not be happy about it, which is a line that Gandalf uses with, is it Bilbo or Frodo?
Frodo about
Gollum, whether or not.
No, it's Bilbo. I think it's Bilbo in the beginning.
Right. About like Gollum getting what he deserves. And he says, I dare say he does deserve death. So do we all, if we all got what we deserve.
Right. Gandalf doesn't say exactly that, but that's really the point.
The gist of what Gandalf says is that we all deserve punishment.
But and also, who are we to mete out what people deserve?
Right. Can you give life and can you give death?
Right.
I mean.
So what we deserve is strict justice, but what we get is mercy and love.
And tenderness. And forgiveness. Jesus wants to be tender with us and give us not what we deserve, not the punishment we deserve, but mercy to say,
right,
go, sin no more.
And to do that, Jesus gets what he doesn't deserve, which is death on a cross. You know, I mean, it's what we deserve is that awful death and punishment, but he takes it instead. So.
Yeah. And the woman leaves. I mean, how wonderful must she have felt when she, I mean, she obviously spent the rest of her life following Jesus because.
Right. Some say this is Mary Magdalene, but there's no, that's just a pious legend. We don't know if that's really who she was, but
whoever she was, even if she wasn't that Mary Magdalene, we know that Mary Magdalene was rescued by Jesus from seven demons.
Right.
And we know that this woman would have followed Jesus and given her entire life to him because he looked at her with love.
Right. And Jesus says, go and be good, or go and, you know, you're fine, whatever. He says, go. And from now on, don't sin anymore. You know, I mean, as hard as that is to not sin anymore, but he says, don't, like, he doesn't say you're okay in whatever it is you've been doing. I'm not, he doesn't say what she was caught doing, the adultery, was fine. He's not confirming her in her sinfulness. He's saying that was wrong. Don't do that. But I'm not condemning you for it. And go live your life. Be happy. So, yeah, it was a really good homily. Father Matt hit it out of the ballpark. I really appreciated him. It's funny, like some priests, I listen to the homily, I do my best to pay attention, but my mind wanders. My mind never wanders when Father Matt is giving his homilies. It's really good.
He also tends to be very succinct and doesn't.
Right. He's a Marine.
doesn't drag it out.
Yes, it's like he's given an op order at a briefing. You know, I mean, he's this and this, and he.
But it's not
militaristic.
It's not terse.
No.
Like he gives it the time it needs, and
he's serious about it. There are priests I gather who get up there and they're kind of want to be folksy and funny, and it's not that Father Matt isn't friendly or, but he's not. But he handles it with seriousness. The seriousness that it deserves. The whole mass. And that's one thing I really appreciate is it's not that you saw
other priests coming in 10 minutes late to mass would give a long apology about why they were late and an explanation.
Or and maybe sometimes even a reverent joke about it.
Right.
One priest we know.
But Father Matt, he never made reference to the fact that he was late
started.
Or why he was late. He just walked up, started the mass, said the mass. And that was
down to business.
It was very focused. And I really kind of appreciated the freedom of just focus.
It kind of reminds me of Father Murphy. Not in the way he speaks or anything, but in the way he treats the mass. Father Murphy had a respect for the mass. Not like and like I said, not like solemn or like over ceremonial or, you know, like over dramatic, but just treats it seriously. Like this is a serious thing we're doing. This is an important thing we're doing. And so I'm going to respect it. I feel like they both have been like that. Anyway, before we go any further and before my voice gives out, let's wrap things up. I want to take a moment to thank our patrons who make it possible for us to create Raising the Bets, including John K., Kevin S., Matthew B., Teresa J., and David L. Their generous donations at sqpn.com/give make it possible for us to continue Raising the Bets and all the shows at StarQuest. You can join them by visiting sqpn.com/give. That's it from us. You can find links from our discussion in our show notes at sqpn.com/bets. That's BETTS. Send us your feedback at the SQPN Facebook page, facebook.com/StarQuestMedia, or send an email to bets@sqpn.com, or visit our brand new StarQuest Discord community at sqpn.com/Discord. And I want to make a clarification that someone asked. You do not need to be a patron to join our community there. I know some Discord communities are patrons only. Ours is open to anyone. So whether you can afford to be a patron or not, or whether it fits your life right now, we want you to join the Discord and join the community and join the conversation. It's going awesome. So we want to see you there. So until next time, I'm Dom Bettinelli.
And I'm Elaine Bettinelli.
Thank you for listening to Raising the Bets on StarQuest.